I want you to picture something for a second. Think about that cheap, plastic promotional USB stick that's probably sitting in your junk drawer right now.
Oh, yeah, the one with, like, a local bank logo on it?
Exactly. Or, you know, one that was handed out at a conference 5 years ago. Now, hold that humble piece of plastic in your mind, and right next to it, I want you to picture a multi-million dollar AI data center.
Just humming with the most advanced liquid-cooled processors on the planet.
Right, and the contrast is pretty extreme.
I mean, you're looking at the absolute bottom of the consumer tech barrel next to the pinnacle of modern human engineering.
But here is the mind-bending premise of today's deep dive. Both of those things, your junk drawer USB stick and that petabyte-scale AI cluster, they rely on the exact same fundamental technology to function.
Yeah, we're talking about NAND flash memory.
Scaled up in the data center, scaled down your drawer. But underneath it all, the physics are identical.
Exactly identical.
Today, we're unpacking a highly detailed piece of research titled How NAND Flash Works, from your SSD to the AI data center. It's part of a broader series called The Memory Stack.
It's a great series.
It really is. And our mission today is to solve a fascinating mystery. We're going to explore how a microchip that became incredibly cheap by becoming, well, intentionally fragile, has suddenly turned into the absolute hottest commodity in the massive AI boom.
To really appreciate the scale of this mystery, you kind of have to look at how the semiconductor industry treated NAND for the last 40 years.
Right.
It was undeniably the most boring part of a computer.
The bottom of the barrel.
Literally the cheap, slow, reliable bucket all the way at the bottom of the computing hierarchy. I mean, when engineers talked about the cutting edge, they talked about the logic die, you know, the brain of the computer actually doing the math.
Or they talked about the high bandwidth memory feeding that brain.
Exactly. NAND was just the dusty warehouse where your data went to sit still. It was a total afterthought.
The warehouse is a great way to think about it. But the source material makes a really compelling point. To understand the economics of this chip, and why AI is suddenly desperate for it, you have to understand the physics first.
You do.
We need to talk about why NAND remembers your data when the power goes out, because the memory that your computer uses to actively think, which is DRAM, is totally forgetful.
Right. So DRAM is incredibly fast, but it requires constant power to maintain its state.
It just drops everything if it loses power.
Yeah, it loses everything in a fraction of a second the moment you unplug the machine. But NAND, on the other hand, is non-volatile.
Meaning it stays.
Exactly. You can save a document, throw that USB stick in a drawer for a year, and the file is still there.
So how does it do that?
Well, the trick to how it pulls this off is beautifully simple on a structural level. Every single storage cell is a microscopic transistor, and right in the middle of it, there is an electrically isolated layer.
Like an island.
Yeah. Historically, engineers called this a floating gate, but in modern chips, it's known as a charge trap layer.
So it's an isolated island.
An island entirely surrounded by a highly durable insulating barrier. So to write a bit of data, you know, a one or a zero, you have to get electrons onto that island.
Okay.
And because it's completely insulated on all sides, you can't just flow them in smoothly. You have to use exceptionally high voltage to forcibly drag those electrons through the solid barrier.
The technical term in the research for this is Fowler-Nordheim tunneling. Right.
That's the one.
I saw that term in the text, and I have to admit, quantum tunneling sounds like sci-fi jargon.
Mm-hmm.
How do you drag a physical particle through a solid wall without breaking the wall?
That is the magic of quantum mechanics, really. At that microscopic scale, electrons don't act just like solid little spheres.
They're more like waves.
Yeah, they act like waves of probability. So when you apply a massive voltage across that barrier, you're essentially warping the probability field so much that the electrons don't punch a physical hole through the wall.
They just appear on the other side.
They just probabilistically appear on the other side of it, on the island.
That is wild. So it's basically the Hotel California for electrons.
I love that.
We use a high voltage quantum teleporter to check them in. And once they're on the island, they have absolutely nowhere to go.
Right. They can't leave unless we apply another massive voltage to teleport them back out.
And that isolation is why your data survives without power. The charge just sits trapped on that island for years.
Exactly. But you touched on something crucial when you mentioned the high voltage, and that brings us to the fundamental asymmetry of NAND flash.
Which dictates basically everything else we're going to discuss.
It really does. So reading data is gentle. You don't have to pull the electrons out to check on them. You just apply a tiny voltage to the transistor and measure whether the cell conducts electricity.
And that tells you if it's full or empty?
Yeah, that tells you how much charge is on the island without disturbing the electrons at all.
Okay, so reading is just a quick, harmless observation.
Mm-hmm.
But writing and erasing, those are violent events.
Very violent. I mean, even though the electrons are technically quantum tunneling, that massive spike in voltage puts immense electrical stress on the insulating barrier.
So it does cause damage.
Yeah. Every single time you force electrons through, the barrier takes a microscopic amount of physical damage. Little defects or traps form in the insulating material.
It gets worn out.
Right. Over thousands of write cycles, that damage accumulates, the barrier gets leaky, and eventually that island can no longer reliably hold its charge. The electrons just drift away.
Wow, so a flash chip doesn't die from old age.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't wear out from sitting in your laptop for a decade or from you opening your photos 1,000 times.
Not at all.
It dies specifically from being written to too many times.
And you really want to hold on to that fact because it makes the entire modern storage industry suddenly make perfect sense.
Well, let's talk about that because if writing causes permanent physical damage, why do modern solid-state drives seem to wear out so much faster than they used to?
That's a great question.
I remember older SSDs lasting forever,
uh-huh.
But now there are all these warnings about heavy workloads destroying drives.
That comes down to the industry's obsession with cost. The primary goal of storage manufacturers for decades has been driving down the cost per gigabyte.
Right, cheaper is better.
Exactly. And once engineers figured out how to trap charge on that island, they realized they were leaving money on the table.
How so?
Well, why store just a simple yes or no, you know, a one or a zero? If you have equipment sensitive enough to detect exactly how much charge is on the island, you can divide that single physical cell into multiple levels.
You slice the pie thinner.
You do. In the early days, we had SLC, or single level cell. That held 1 bit per cell, which meant just 2 voltage levels, present or absent.
Okay.
And because the gap between empty and full is so massive, an SLC cell is incredibly durable. The insulator can get quite damaged and leaky, and it's still obvious whether the cell is a 1 or a 0.
So it lasts a long time.
Yeah, SLC can survive 50,000 to 100,000 write-and-erase cycles. You actually still find it today in industrial settings or automotive systems where reliability is literally life or death.
But the industry didn't stop at 2 levels.
Oh, definitely not.
Mm-hmm.
They moved to MLC, storing 2 bits per cell by carving the charge into 4 voltage levels.
Then TLC, which stores 3 bits across 8 voltage levels, right?
Yep. And today, the mainstream cheap storage mentioned in the source is QLC, or quad-level cell.
Quad meaning 4.
Exactly. That packs 4 bits into a single physical cell, which requires carving that tiny microscopic charge into 16 distinct voltage levels.
16 levels in one tiny cell.
Yeah, and the labs are even working on PLC, pushing for 32 levels.
Wait, okay. If I go out and drop a few $100s on a 4 terabyte QLC drive to back of my computer, the source says it might only survive 100 to 1,000 write cycles before it starts failing.
That's true.
That feels like a massive step backward for the consumer. Like, why accept something so fragile?
I know. It feels totally counterintuitive to buy technology that degrades faster than its predecessor, but it is pure geometry and economics.
Okay, but break that down for me.
You're taking the exact same physical space for holding electrical charge, but instead of checking if it's generally full or empty, you are demanding it land on one of 16 razor-thin margins.
Ah, I see. Think about a standard 12-inch ruler.
Okay.
If I hand you that ruler and ask you to divide it into 2 sections, you draw a thick marker line right at 6 inches. It is incredibly easy to tell if a dot is on the left half or the right half.
Right.
You could smudge the dot, you could scrape the ruler, you could spill coffee on it, and it's still obvious.
Very obvious.
But if I ask you to divide that exact same 12-inch ruler into 16 perfectly equal razor-thin sections,
suddenly even a microscopic smudge ruins your ability to measure accurately.
Yes. Or, in the case of NAND, a slightly worn-out insulator from a few hundred write cycles causes a tiny bit of electron leakage.
Exactly. The charge drifts just a fraction of a volt, and suddenly it crosses one of those 16 boundaries, and the drive reads back a completely wrong number.
Wow.
This extreme sensitivity explains so many quirks of modern storage. It's why denser cells are significantly slower to write.
Because they have to be careful.
Yeah, the hardware has to nudge the electrons in very, very carefully to hit the exact right level out of 16 without overshooting.
That makes perfect sense.
It's also why they are slower to read. And crucially, it's why modern QLC requires incredibly aggressive error-correcting codes.
Because it's constantly messing up.
Sort of. The storage controller is constantly doing complex math behind the scenes, guessing what a slightly degraded cell was supposed to say, and quietly fixing corrupted bits every single time you open a file.
So there's zero free lunch here. Every bit of density you buy, you are paying for with endurance.
Exactly. QLC gives you wild amounts of cheap space, but it is fundamentally slow and fragile.
Which explains why NAND has traditionally been cold storage. It's the perfect place for an archive of family videos, but it would completely self-destruct if you used it to log transactions for a high-frequency trading database.
Right. And that trade-off worked for a long time. Consumers wanted cheap terabytes, and QLC delivered. But by the mid-2010s, the source notes that the industry ran into a massive physics roadblock.
Oh.
They couldn't just keep shrinking these cells and cramming them closer together on a flat piece of silicon.
They hit a wall.
The wall of horizontal scaling. For decades, the semiconductor playbook was highly predictable. You shrink the transistor, pack more of them to the same square millimeter, lower the cost, and do it again 2 years later.
Moore's Law, basically.
Exactly. But once they shrunk the cells down to the mid-teens of nanometers, physics just stopped cooperating.
Let me guess, the cells were just physically too close to each other.
Too close and holding too much charge. The cells were sitting so tightly together that the electrical charge trapped on one island actually started to exert a force on the electrons on the island next door.
So they were messing with each other.
Yeah, it's called cell-to-cell interference. If you squeeze them any tighter, the bits would literally corrupt each other just by sitting there. Planar, two-dimensional NAND was completely dead in the water.
Yet I can go to the store today and buy a drive with more terabytes for less money than I could 10 years ago. So how did they bypass a hard limit of physics?
The industry executed one of the most spectacular pivots in the history of manufacturing. They stopped shrinking the cells horizontally and they started building vertically.
Oh.
Instead of fighting for space on a flat neighborhood lot, they built a skyscraper. They laid the cells on top of each other, projecting upward from the exact same footprint on the silicon wafer.
The source refers to this as 3D NAND, right? And the layer counts they list are just staggering.
They really are.
It points out that the first commercial 3D NAND around 2013 stacked 24 layers. But fast forward to our current year, 2026, and we're looking at shipping parts with 280 to over 300 layers.
It's incredible.
Yeah, Micron has a 276-layer chip. Samsung is at 286 layers. SK Hynix has a 321-layer part. The public roadmaps are pointing toward 1,000 layers by 2030.
The sheer verticality of it completely resets the entire scaling curve. Layer count basically became the new Moore's Law. But to really grasp what a 300-layer chip means, you have to look at the manufacturing nightmare required to build it.
The research spells out the etching process, and honestly, it sounds bordering on impossible.
It practically is.
To stack 300 layers, you have to drill a microscopic hole straight down through all 300 of them to connect the cells. You have to line every single microscopic channel to the exact same materials, absolutely perfectly, with zero defects, across a shaft that is vastly deeper than it is wide.
Right.
If there is one single microscopic flaw anywhere in that drop, it kills the entire string of cells.
Yeah, etching a clean, uniform hole through 300 alternating layers of material pushes the absolute boundaries of chemistry and plasma physics. In fact, it's so difficult that the leading manufacturers generally can't even do it in one shot anymore.
So what did they do?
They have to use a process called string stacking.
How does that work?
They build a 150-layer chip and drill those holes. Then they build a second, entirely separate 150-layer chip and drill those holes.
Okay.
Finally, they bond the two chips together, one directly on top of the other. But the tolerance for error is practically zero.
I can imagine.
Imagine taking 250-story skyscrapers and dropping one onto the other, and you have to make sure every single elevator shaft aligns down to the fraction of a nanometer.
That is insane.
If they're slightly misaligned, the electrical signal just hits a literal wall.
So they're sprinting up a vertical cliff face to keep this technology cheap. Every new layer means more capacity on the same silicon wafer,
Yeah.
compounding with that fragile 16-level QLC density we talked about earlier.
Exactly.
So we end up with drives that hold immense amounts of data for pennies on the dollar, but the individual cells are incredibly delicate.
Very delicate.
Which brings up a really practical question. If QLC NAND is as fragile as we just established, dying after maybe a few hundred write cycles, how on earth does a modern solid-state drive survive in a laptop for 5 years?
Well, the secret to its survival isn't actually in the memory chips themselves.
Really?
No. But before we reveal that, the source has two really fascinating footnotes we should clear up. First, it gives a quick nod to NOR flash, which you might hear about in hardware circles and wonder why it isn't in your SSD.
NOR is kind of like NAND's fast, expensive cousin, isn't it?
Yeah, they have completely opposite jobs. NOR flash allows a computer to read data randomly, byte by byte.
Okay.
That means a processor can execute code directly out of the flash memory without moving it first. It's incredibly fast for booting up a device, but it is way too expensive and bulky for mass storage.
So NOR lives in firmware and boot ROMs running the code, while NAND sits in the background holding the bulk data.
Exactly. Now, the second footnote is even more critical. The text calls it the original sin of NAND, the erase problem.
Oh, this blew my mind.
So weird, right?
You can write data to NAND in very small, manageable units called pages, which are just a few kilobytes. But due to the physical wiring of the cells, you can only erase data in massive structural units called blocks, which are made of hundreds of pages.
Right. You cannot overwrite a single page in place. It is a fundamental, hardwired limitation of the physics.
So what happens if you try?
Well, if you want to change one single byte of data in a file, the drive cannot just swap that byte. It has to read the entire massive block into temporary memory, modify that one byte, write the entire block somewhere entirely fresh on the drive, and then flag the old block to be erased later when there's downtime.
It's like writing a novel in pen, but the rules dictate you can't use whiteout.
I like that.
If you notice a single typo on page 4, you have to physically shred the entire chapter, pull out a fresh stack of paper, and rewrite the whole thing from scratch just to fix the typo.
Perfect analogy. And that mismatch writing in small chunks, but erasing in massive chunks, generates immense complexity. If your computer's operating system just kept saving a file to the exact same physical block over and over, that block would endure hundreds of erase cycles in a matter of days and literally die.
So how does the drive prevent itself from burning a hole in its own memory?
Your SSD has a brain. It's entirely managed by a dedicated processor called the controller, which runs a piece of software called the flash translation layer.
FTL.
Right, the FTL. This layer sits between your computer's operating system and the raw memory chips. It frantically shuffles data around behind the scenes, employing a strategy called wear leveling.
So it spreads it out.
Exactly. It intercepts every save command and intentionally spreads the writes evenly across all the billions of cells on the drive, ensuring no single block gets hammered to death while others sit empty.
But because it's constantly shuffling things around, copying whole blocks just to free up space, one single save command from the user might trigger 3 or 4 physical writes happening in the background.
Yep. And that phenomenon is called write amplification. A write amplification factor of 3 means that for every gigabyte your computer asks to save, the flash cells actually endure 3 gigabytes of physical wear.
Oh, wow.
This hidden multiplier is why the controller is often the most advanced piece of silicon in your SSD. It is desperately playing a high-speed game of Tetris to keep that incredibly fragile QLC flash alive for the warranty period of the drive.
Okay, this sets up the ultimate contradiction of the entire deep dive.
Here we go.
We have established the ground truth. QLC NAND is incredibly cheap. It is unimaginably dense, stacked over 300 layers high into the sky. But because of quantum tunneling damage and razor-thin voltage margins, it is terribly fragile when you write to it.
Correct.
So why on earth is cutting-edge multi-million-dollar AI suddenly buying it up in massive quantities?
The plot twist happens because of something called the memory wall in AI architecture. In those massive AI data centers, the most precious fought-over resource isn't actually the raw computing power of the GPUs.
Really? What is it?
It's the ultra-fast memory bolted directly alongside those processors, known as HBM or high-bandwidth memory.
The source notes this is wildly expensive and scarce. When a tech giant is building a new AI cluster, HBM makes up a massive slice of the entire bill.
Oh, yeah. And there is never enough of it. During AI inference, which is the phase where you're actually talking to the AI, asking it to generate an essay or write code, a huge chunk of that precious HBM gets completely clogged up, holding something called the KV cache.
Okay, let's unpack that. The KV cache is essentially the AI's running memory of your conversation, right?
Basically, yeah.
So if I upload a 100-page PDF and ask the AI a question about page 50, it has to hold that entire PDF in its working memory to formulate the answer.
Exactly. The AI needs context. Some of that context is hot, meaning the model is actively processing it right this second, but a lot of it is cold.
Like the beginning of the PDF.
Right, it's the beginning of the conversation or the first 80 pages of the document. The model might need to refer back to it later, but it isn't actively computing it in this exact millisecond.
The source uses a brilliant analogy for this. It says, holding cold KV cash in scarce, expensive HBM is like parking a car that you know you won't drive until next week in the absolute most expensive hourly parking garage in the middle of downtown.
It's a great analogy because the economics are completely offensive to a system architect. You have the single priciest component in the whole server rack just sitting there, burning power, holding data it isn't even looking at.
While you have cheap options available.
Exactly. Meanwhile, down at the bottom of the server rack, you have NAND flash, which is orders of magnitude cheaper per gigabyte.
So the industry found an arbitrage opportunity.
They did the obvious thing. They designed systems to spill the cold parts of the AI's memory down the hierarchy onto cheap, dense NAND flash.
So they park the car in the cheap lot in the suburbs.
Yep, and they only pull it back up into the expensive HBM downtown when the model actually needs a look at that specific part of the conversation.
The text highlights NVIDIA actively building hardware to do exactly this. They have a technology called CMX Context Memory Extension, which relies on their BlueField 4 DPUs.
Right.
And it's probably worth clarifying what a DPU actually does here.
Sure. A DPU, or data processing unit, acts like a highly specialized traffic cop. Normally, if a GPU wants data from a storage drive, the main CPU has to manage that transfer, which bogs the whole system down.
Okay.
The DPU bypasses all of that. It allows the GPU to pull the cold cache directly from the NAND flash over the network.
So it's super efficient.
Extremely. It doesn't replace the expensive memory. It just gives the GPU a massive, highly efficient overflow tank.
And if you look at the industry order books for 2025 and 2026, AI demand caused a massive surge in enterprise QLC solid-state drives.
Mm.
They are buying the densest, cheapest, most fragile flash on the market to act as this overflow tank.
They are buying it all up.
But wait, if they're constantly moving data in and out of this overflow tank, doesn't the fragility of QLC become a massive liability? Like, aren't they going to destroy their drives?
And this is the aha moment of the entire storage industry.
Okay, wait on me.
When you synthesize the workload of an AI data center, you realize something profound. AI inference is an overwhelmingly read-heavy workload. You load the multi-terabyte model into memory once. You stream the conversation cache into the storage. The GPU reads that context over and over and over again to generate each new word. But it rarely ever rewrites the old context.
Oh. And if we go all the way back to the physics of the charge trap island we started with,
right.
Reading is gentle.
Just measuring the voltage.
Right. Writes are what cause the microscopic damage and kill the flash.
Exactly. The one fatal flaw of QLC NAND, its pathetic endurance, its fragility when writing simply doesn't matter for AI inference.
Because the AI doesn't need to rewrite the PDF you uploaded. It just needs to read it really fast.
Exactly. But its greatest strength, its insane capacity per dollar from stacking 300 layers high, is exactly what AI is starving for to hold all those massive context windows.
That is incredible. So the technology didn't change one bit. The quantum tunneling physics are exactly the same. The job description changed.
Bingo. AI inference craves capacity and simply doesn't care about write fragility, making QLC the perfect serendipitous match.
And the source points out this arbitrage is going even further, right? It's not just an overflow tank sitting across the network anymore.
Oh no, it's getting closer to the action.
SanDisk is working on something called High Bandwidth Flash, or HBF, expected to be in pre-production by the second half of 2026.
This is the boldest version of the idea yet. SanDisk is proposing using TSVs, which are through silicon vias.
What are those?
They're microscopic vertical wires drilled straight through the silicon chips, allowing them to stack the NAND flash memory right next to the GPU itself on the exact same package where the expensive HBM lives.
They're moving the cheap lot into premium real estate.
They literally are. They're pitching 8 to 16 times the capacity of HBM at a comparable overall system cost. By putting it that close to the processor, the bandwidth limitations of traditional storage basically disappear. Wow.
NAND is literally moving from the dusty bottom shelf of the storage hierarchy right into the penthouse suite next to the math engine.
What a journey. Let's summarize this, because the logical through line here is just so incredibly satisfying.
It really is a great story.
We started with the quantum physics of trapping electrons on an insulated island, which created a hard trade-off. If you want more density by slicing the voltage levels thinner, you have to accept vastly more fragility.
Right.
We saw how the industry kept the cost plummeting by engineering the absurdity of stacking those islands 300 layers into the sky. And finally, we saw how AI's insatiable, read-heavy appetite for holding conversation context turned NAND's biggest weakness into a complete non-issue.
The chip that got cheap by accepting its own fragility got promoted because the new workload simply doesn't care about the stars. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the memory stack. I really hope the next time you open your desk drawer and see that cheap promotional USB stick, you look at it with just a little more respect.
Yeah.
It is the exact same physics keeping the multi-trillion dollar AI revolution from going broke.
It really is. And I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over.
Go for it.
Today we explored how a perceived weakness in NAND became entirely irrelevant simply because the technology found a new specialized workload. It makes you wonder about other obsolete formats.
Like what?
Think about magnetic tape or even those old optical CD-ROMs sitting in a binder in your basement. They're incredibly slow, and you can't easily rewrite them.
All right, they feel useless now.
But they require absolute zero electricity to maintain their state for decades. As AI data centers begin to consume the power output of small nations, you have to wonder if the next multi-billion dollar breakthrough might just be a modern reimagining of the optical disk, stepping in to solve the energy crisis of 100-year cold storage.